Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. It once again, I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Well, hello everyone, good evening, and welcome to the Stop Now podcast. We're excited to be here this evening with you, and we have a little guest that I can't wait to. We got to do some of the business. We are on scan 29588, and we would love to have you call in and be a part of our panel. The guest call-in number is 646-595-2118. And here at NASCA, we have a single purpose, and that is to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect, with two goals. One, by educating the public, especially as it's related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, CSA, and presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic, worldwide problem that affects everyone. And number two, by offering hope and healing through numerous paths and providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. And again, we'd love to have you call in and be a part of our panel tonight. It's the National Association of Adult Survivors, and we have, my name is Kim, and I'm your host this evening, and we have Dr. Nancy with us this evening, co-hosting. Dr. Nancy, are you there?
Yes, Liz. Good evening. I'm so happy to be on tonight, and I'm so honored to have Miss Judy joining us tonight. I cannot wait to hear her story.
Yeah, so Marsha is the author of a book called A Wretch Like Me, and she is, so she isn't really affiliated to the story other than she wrote it and she was really involved.
Oh,
so,
really?
Yeah, so Marsha is our guest, and she's from California, and she wrote Like Me. It's a biography which covers her friend Judy, Judy Ray Hershog's life from birth to today. And she's now 80 years old, and Marsha from her career as a CPA. She says she watched our homeless situation worsen and became interested in the invisible people, those who were poor and alone. 3 years ago, Marsha and her husband met Judy for dinner, and Judy asked if she could take it to-go box. So when the waiter brought her the containers, she proceeded to scrape every last scrap from each of the plates that were on the table. And it was surprising to Judy, or surprising to Marsha, because Judy was well-dressed and well-mannered. Marsha thought, so Judy revealed that she was often starved as a child. In fact, she was violently and sexually abused as a child and was eventually married to Sixton. The abuse impacted the lives of her three children. So I'm not going to read any more. We've got more on here, but I would love for Marsha to just tell us a little bit more about her story, how she met Judy, and then, yeah, go into the story. So welcome to the show, Marcia. We're so happy to have you on this evening.
Okay. Yeah, thank you so much. That was a nice intro. Yeah, my career was as an accountant, but I always had an interest in writing, and I knew that when I retired that I wanted to write, and I was looking for a story, and I was particularly interested in people that nobody else really sees, as you said. And when Judy told me she grew up very hungry and told me some things about her neglect, I thought, wow, this is a really interesting story. I'd like to write a book about you. And so she agreed. And when I started to question her and interview her, she told me a little bit at the beginning that her father was very neglectful, but when he came home, he would put her on his lap and rub her, as if you know what I mean, and she could feel him. But she really, to her, that was normal. She didn't know when she was a little tiny child of 3 or 2, she didn't know that that was not okay. But she started to tell me a little bit about it, and I thought, okay, well, no big deal. She probably grew out of it and didn't get on his lap. And then I started to write the story, and the more I probed her, the more the story started to evolve. And this is the thing. It was difficult for Judy to go to some of the places where I wanted her to go. I could tell in the beginning, 3 years ago I started this book, and I could tell at the beginning that she was having some emotional issues. Now, she's 80 years old, and the memories are starting to come, and her husband, who's a good friend of my husband, which is how I met Judy, because he married her late in his life. You know, I think he was in his early 70s or something when they got married, or maybe even 60. But anyway, he told me, he goes, I think you need to kind of back off a little bit because Judy's having issues. And then I found out that Judy was taking psychotropic drugs, Prozac. And with that, I said, you know, Judy, I think we need to back away from this. You know, I'm just going to put it aside. And so I literally did nothing for 2 years. But what she told me was so riveting that I could not let it go. And so my husband, by the way, my husband and his friend, Judy's husband, were both Vietnam combat helicopter pilots. And they both suffer badly from post-traumatic stress syndrome, from the trauma that they experienced in Vietnam. So I'm aware of what PTSD looks like, and I started to realize that that was what was occurring with Judy. She had some stress that was coming back up, and it was causing her emotional trauma. I recognized the signs. So after 2 years, I called Judy, and I said, you know, I can't. Your story is just, I could not put it down. It was in my mind, you know, and if you read the book, you're going to see what I'm talking about. You cannot stop this story once you get into it. It's a page turner. I mean, a lot of our readers say they can't put it down once they start it. It just, and these are people that have no experience with it. I can imagine someone that has experience, what it would do to them. You're not going to be able to put it down. And so I said, Judy, I'd like to start it up, but instead of just me interviewing you, I'd like to get a friend of mine who was a TV reporter, and also she was a reporter for the LA Times in LA, and she actually interviewed me on TV down in Fox 11 down in LA, and I talked to Heidi, her name's Heidi Kuda, and I said, Heidi, I've got this story, but I really think it takes two of us because there's some PTSD going on here, and I need someone like you because I know that she had to interview people down in L.A. with some very traumatic things that occurred with them. You know the news. I mean, she was a news reporter and had to get the story no matter what. But she had a way to get it. And I said, I really need a professional like you to help me interview her and help me put the story together. And both of us worked on it in tandem. But what happened with Judy is she was very young, and her father was a drifter, and her mother was mentally ill as well. Her mother, her father ended up being convicted of pedophilia, and this was after her mother had left him, when her mother discovered that he was not only molesting Judy, but he was mostly molesting Judy's sister. And I didn't dwell on that part of his actions because I knew that was way too hard. I just knew Judy would always say in our interviews that her sister was his favorite. And there were times where he would take the two girls away from the home and take them to a hotel, and Judy would be laying in the bed next to their bed and listening to what was going on, and her mother would come with the police looking for him and bring them back home. There's just a lot of it. We didn't cover a lot of what she told us in the book. We left a lot of it out. It was just too difficult, and we wanted the reader to stay with the story. In fact, a lot of people say when they start our book, it's really hard to get through it because it was so painful at the beginning, because not only was she sexually abused, both she and her sister, they were abused physically, you know, beating, and emotionally, and they didn't eat. The kids, she had a brother that the three of them had to forage for themselves to eat. They went into garbage. They ate insects. They broke into a theater. They were in a very small town in Wyoming called Kemmerer, Wyoming, and there was one theater, and they broke into the theater in the back door, literally so they could eat the candy and the popcorn off the floor so they could eat. While the kids, you know, the kids in the theater would spill it on the floor. And that's how they survived on their own. And it turns out the more we probed, we found out that her mother was a prostitute. We don't go into that in detail, and Judy never really came out and said it to us. But we found a lot of, there were a lot of stories about her mother and men coming around that we knew that would be the only logical thing that we could think of, because her mother, with no but one to support her, this was in the post-war years, you know, where women stayed at home and the father brought home the bacon. She had no money because Judy's father would not give them money, and he would go out drinking and dancing. He was a very good looking, handsome man, very good dancer, very charming. And it turns out after Judy and her left with her family and left their father, that her father was convicted of molesting a young girl in a theater of all places in Ely, Nevada. And Judy at that time was living in Ogden. And so his girlfriend, Fran, asked Judy and her sister if they would come to Ely. And Judy was, I think, 15 at the time. And I think her sister was maybe 16. So they were young. But Judy, Fran came to Ogden, took them to this courtroom, and we've got the transcript of the trial, which is amazing. It's in the book, and you cannot put it down. The guy, her father was self-defended himself, but it's all in the book. But Judy and her sister literally went all that way in order to lie for their father to keep him out of prison. This is the thing that really bounced out at me. In spite of him being so awful to them growing up, they loved him. And they did everything they could to support him. And they were so proud of lying on the stand. But he ended up still going to prison they call it grooming for pedophiles. They groom young girls. I think she was 11. And he was getting aroused by feeling her up in the movie theater. It's pretty graphic in the book. Sorry about that. But what was interesting, she still continued to love him, and the love was so strong, and that was what was profound to me. And some of our readers,
You know what it
I
is.
Had, and we had one reader that put it that gave us a review. She had worked for social services in Los Angeles, and she was very moved by the book. And she said, this is what social workers don't understand when they try to help children that are growing up in awful situations like Judy and her family or her sister and brother. They the first thing they want to do is remove them without taking into account the strong bond, because these poor children, that's the only love they know. And even though her father would put her up on his lap and hug her and feel her, that was the way she thought he loved her. And what happened, here she was a young girl, and now she's 80. She ended up marrying at six, I think she was 16. She had to get her mother's approval to get married. And her husband was just like her father. He was abusive, neglectful. He raped her. And she stayed with him and had three children with him and finally got the guts to leave him. And then the next husband was also abusive. She had a pattern of marrying men that were abusive. But after the second time, the way she got out of it was she had to go on public assistance a little bit because, you know, when you're young, she was in the early 60s. You know, women, it wasn't. The women's movement hadn't started, so she was still not really able to leave. You know, she had three kids. They didn't have child care benefits and all that we have today. But the way she left him is she saved money. She got a little job at a thrift store. I think it was a Woolworths or something. And she saved her pennies, literally, to have enough money to get away. And she found that working and having a sense of dignity to herself, that was what saved her. Her ability to get a job and work and to take care of her family. But even then, she had so many repercussions of this terrible childhood that just kept hitting her and all the difficulties she had getting out. And she's not one of these women in a book that you read that become an attorney or a politician. I mean, she's just a regular gal. She retired she worked for Safeway. She was a nursing aide assistant. She worked regular jobs, but she always had this baggage that carried her around through her life of being abused as a child and needing that love. She was always looking for love. That's why she went from one guy to another. She wanted that love to take the place of what she thought was loved by her father. And anyway, I just found it fascinating. I didn't realize the book was going to go where it went. I thought I was going to talk about a very poor person. I wanted to know how people survive when they have no money. And I had no idea it was going to involve into we call it hunger porn is what the book is being tagged at. It's a form of hunger porn because she mixed sex with hunger because she was hungry, but then she was also very sexual. She was sexualized at a very young age.
Right.
So anyway, I just had a lot of fun writing it, and I think our readers just loved it.
Wow.
That's great. Well, I was going to say that if you don't mind, maybe just taking a minute and we could ask
if she wants to add anything in, and because you've gone through so much already. But I wanted to say, first of all, is, you know, and I don't know how much you've heard about other survivors or anything, Marcia, but, you know, a lot of what you talk about as far as the PTSD and, you know, not wanting to get that person in trouble, I mean, that's all pretty normal things that happen to us as survivors, as children, and even you talking about, you know, her at 3 years old not knowing what it is. That's so, and that's the point right there, is that is how to protect themselves about body safety, then they're going to think that abuse is normal. And I went through that as well. I grew up in a very abusive household, and I know that at many points I was like, you know, this is my life, and it kind of questioned it. And then when I got pregnant at 18, I said, no, this isn't going to be my daughter's life. And so it takes somebody really strong to, you know, step in and say, no, this isn't going to happen. I'm going to stop this continual abuse that's going on in my family, generational abuse, and not let that continue to happen. It does take.
Right.
And I know we haven't talked a whole lot about her kids, but you said, of course it affected her kids. I mean, there's no doubt that it did. I know that as hard as I tried, and I didn't ever tell my kids that I was abused as an adult, or you know, when they were growing up, I never told them. I still know that they have some of that trauma. I know it. And I can see it a lot in my oldest daughter, too. So those are just kind of my thoughts that I wanted to go over real quick.
Yeah.
And then what did you want to say?
I wanted to say, Miss Marcia, thank you so much for sharing. Mm-hmm. And I do apologize that I did get the names confused because I did look at the schedule. And so thank you so much for taking on the role that you did to be able to help her share her story, because a lot of times when you go through sexual abuse and trauma as a child, and I'm also a survivor of child sexual abuse, it was a similar situation to Judy's story. What happens is your brain on trauma, you do endure. It's so much that you endure, and you fight going between being a child and then being defenseless. Like, you have a hard time defending yourself, and you do enter into a lot of these abusive relationships, and you do deal with a lot of post-traumatic stress disorder. A lot of times people tell you to pray it away and, you know, and just it'll go away, but no, it's a big process. It's very intentional. It's not easy. So thank you so much for helping her to organize her thoughts and helping her to share her story, because that's a very difficult thing to do. A lot of people that have been through this type of abuse, they self-medicate. So when you were sharing that she was taking this medication and, you know, you couldn't even really get her to tell her story around that time, you were telling her to kind of slow it down, is because the pain is so deep that you just want it to stop and you want to be numb. And that when you're taking medication, you build a high tolerance for alcohol or medication or whatever it is that you're taking, self-medicating with. And that's what happens to a lot of people that had to deal with trauma. You know, you just want it, just the pain to go away, and people don't really understand. And so I just wanted to say thank you. I can't wait to hear more about the story. But just thank you so much for standing up and being a good friend and helping her to share her story.
Yeah.
Such a dramatic story.
Yeah. Yeah, it was interesting because it goes all the way through the book. Like, we took her story, and then at the end, there's a chapter at the end called Hearts and Bones, and we interviewed her kids. And we interviewed the widow of her brother, and we were not able to interview her sister because her sister loved her father. Her sister's still alive. She's not doing well. She's got a neurological disease, but she refused to have anything to do with the book. But as we were interviewing the family members, we realized that the daughter, Judy's daughter, had been molested by her stepfather, the second husband. And well, we kind of knew because Judy wanted out of that marriage, but we didn't realize. And then we realized that Judy told us that she caught him fondling her daughter and knew at that point she had to get out. And and that was really hard for her. Like, cold turkey, had to leave, took her kids and got in the car and leave. But at least she had some savings, a little bit of savings. And that's what, you know, she heard this. She was supposed to do better after leaving her first husband, who was abusive. And then she went right into another abusive marriage. But she didn't realize that he had been fondling her daughter until she actually caught him. So the daughter's got issues. So so this is intergenerational. The daughter has had several marriages. I don't know if she's, you know, self-medicated or anything like that, but I know she hasn't had an easy time. So it really, you know, it's a intergenerational situation here.
I'm so sorry to even hear this, but you're so right. It is. A lot of times when you're abused, you don't learn how to defend yourself, and, you know, you don't learn how to be safe. And then when you have children, you know, it takes a very strong person psychologically to really try to get the right help and to do the steps to make sure that they break that cycle. And a lot of times what happens with people who've been through sexual abuse, we don't want our children to know. We don't want to hurt our children. We want to protect our children. We want them to have a childhood. And so when we do that, you know, they're not informed and they don't know how to defend themselves and how to protect themselves. It's a tough situation. So sometimes you feel like telling them these things will traumatize them more and you want to protect them. But what happens is these predators are all over the place and they take advantage of single mothers, you know, when they know that you have your finances are not as strong, or, you know, just broken families, broken homes. These predators, they take advantage of these kids. They like those type of kids because they know that they can be more manipulative. So that's why today,
right,
we're so big on being informed, trauma informed, and educating ourselves so that we can better protect our children and our community. But back in the days, we didn't talk about this stuff. Didn't talk about this. There's a big difference. Back then, it was a hush-hush.
You know, it's interesting you say that, because I was working the polls whenever the election was, I don't know, a couple weeks ago on Tuesday here in California. And my coworker, I don't know, somehow we got in a conversation, and she was telling me about I live in the country and she lives quite a ways away, but yet she's a neighbor. You know how countries are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's 2 miles away, but she's a neighbor. And I said, so you live out there alone? And she goes, well, no, my son lives with me. And I said, well, that's kind of okay, cool, you know. And he's an adult, you know, which I thought was kind of interesting. And I thought, well, where's dad? And she goes, oh, we got a divorce 2 years ago. And I thought, wow, you've got grown adult children. I just said, I don't want to pry, but what happened? And she came out and said, he was molesting my children. And I thought, wow, now in the old days, nobody would have said that. But but I said, so how are your kids handling your divorce? And she said, they love their father, but they understand why I had to divorce him. And I told her about my book. I said, well, I just finished a book on this exact subject. And ask your kids to read the book, and it might put some insight into it. And she said, oh, I will. But the way she said that is like, finally, I've got something I can give them to help them get through this.
Yes.
It told me that they didn't have help, that there wasn't any help for them. Because, I mean, my book, obviously, it's not a psychobook or a course or anything like that. it just sort of helps you kind of relate to a, someone that's been through it. But that's what, and what told me when she said that and looked so relieved is her kids don't have any help. And they're adults now, but they don't have help. And that's why I was so excited when I found your website, that you guys are here to help adults that survive childhood abuse. Because, you know, because I'm going to tell her about this so that her kids can dial in and listen.
Yes, it's been a few times. It's been a few times that I've spoken to people, and they've told me their story, and they've told me they've never told their children. You know, their children don't know, or their family don't know. They've never told anybody, but especially their children, because it's like, you know, you love your children, and then you're building. Some people really do get a chance to build a beautiful new life, and everybody's, you know, their kids do great and everybody's doing great, and they just don't want to taint that, you know, and so they suffer in silence. And a lot of times, as we're maturing and as we're bringing it more in the forefront and we're making it okay, people are starting to feel safe and comfortable kind of sharing it and being supported. They're not alone, you know.
Yeah, so it's going to be hard because her daughters are starting to have young kids. I mean, one of them's got three young ones. They're going to not be able to see their grandfather. I mean, they're going to have to somehow explain that to their children. And that's where we need help, is to help the victims talk to their kids, if it's a family member especially, and a lot of them are family members. Mm-hmm. You can't go around Uncle Alan or your grandfather. You know, that's the tough thing, is you don't want, and they don't, it's just the way it is. And the adults know, you know, the perpetrators know that they can't be around them either. You know, they realize that they've got a problem. Her husband knows he's got a problem and knows he can't be around his grandkids or his daughters, you know, and, you know, it's really a difficult situation for people.
It is. It really is.
Yeah.
It's easier when you live out of state.
Especially when
you just don't see them. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, Ms. Kim. What were you?
Yes. Yes.
No, go ahead.
It really is. I have, I've forgiven one of my abusers as well, which was my stepdad. And at this point in our lives, we are the only two left out of that family, out of the immediate family, because my mom chose not to leave him when she found out, when I told her. She chose not to leave him, and, of course, I struggled with that for many, many years. And he apologized to me one time, and it was more about he was going through cancer and all this stuff. But now my mom's passed away, and my only brother only passed away, and my biological dad, too. And so it's just him and I now, and I struggle, even though I've made the decision that I'm going to support him in any way that I can. It's still a struggle all the time.
Yeah.
Because you do, I think I deal with the back and forth of, you know, why am I putting up with all his crap now? Why am I? And then I don't. So I've set a lot of boundaries.
Mm-hmm. You have to.
And it took me 50 years to start talking about this. And I am really blessed that I found a program, and I talk about it on the show many times. It's called Darkness to Light, Stewards of Children. And, you know, NASCA on their website, which is NASCA, NASCA.org, they have information on there that you can go on and you can read on your own. And, you know, they've got some groups on there as well that are really great. What I like about Darkness to Light and Stewards of Children is it is about the curriculum. And so I go in and I educate adults on how to, you know, be aware of what's going on around you and what's going on around the child. Then if you are, you know, honored to hear somebody's story, how you respond to that, just like you were saying, Marcia, is huge, too, because you don't know what that relationship is necessarily with the child. And a lot of times they say that you know, when a child changes their story, that it's only because of a reaction that another adult gave them. It's not necessarily ever, hardly, you know, that the child was lying. And so, yeah, and so I can totally see all of that. And, you know what, we have a caller, and it looks like they are from maybe Nevada. Do you mind if I bring them on and see if they have a question for you, Marcia?
Sure, sure. I wonder if it's Judy, maybe.
Yeah, so hello, there's a set number, and you are on live with the NASCA show. Who are we speaking with? Hello?
Maybe
and, you know, sometimes people will come and just listen, yeah. And that's fine, too. So if they don't want to say anything, that's fine. But we're happy that you're here with us. So thanks for being on tonight.
Thank you for joining
us. Yeah, and if it is Judy, you know, we just want you to know that we're here. We're all here for you.
Mm-hmm.
We are all survivors. And, you know, we don't know everything that you went through, and we might not have gone through all of the struggles.
Hello.
But we can.
Oh, somebody said hello.
Hello. This is
yeah,
Judy.
Hi.
This is Judy.
It is.
This is Judy. Yes, yes. I just figured
hi,
out how
Judy.
To get on. Hi. Yes, I'm an 80-year-old woman. But yeah, it affected me. But I am not a victim. I am a survivor.
Yes, yes.
I am.
Yeah.
So if you have any questions, I'm willing to answer.
Perfect. So, Miss Judy, we're so happy to have you on tonight. Thank you for coming on. I'm a survivor of child sexual abuse. So is Miss Kim. I'm Dr. Nancy.
Yeah.
And we're honored to have you on tonight. We were just telling Ms. Marcia, thank you so much for being so supportive and helping to write the story, because a lot of times when we go through such levels of trauma, our minds, you know, our minds, I don't want to say scattered, but our minds, we have a lot going on. We have a lot of work to do, right? We have a lot that we're trying to just get through, right? And so her helping you to write this story was so amazing, and we're just so honored that you're joining us and that you called in. You know, is there anything that you would like to share with us, just to kind
of... First of all, I want to thank Marcy, because she is the one that brought this book on, and she listened to me, and I don't talk about that, never did. I've got 5 kids. The third husband I had was younger than I, and I had 2 girls, and he, when I was 4 months along, he had an affair, and it just goes on and on and on, and that was the hurt most, because I have no self-esteem, because when your mother tries to sell you, your dad molests you, they left us abandoned, 5 of us, no, 4 of us, actually, no food, you know, and we didn't break into the show house. We went to the show house and got the food off the ground and stuff, you know, off the floor. But everything Marcy said is true, because I talked to her about it. But I do have, I am obsessed with men. My mother was also. Trying
That's
to
common.
Find my father. That's what the psychiatrist said. I'm always trying to find my father. Yeah, so, now I'm in a marriage of 11 years, and I'm still struggling. We are struggling, but I am the happiest that I've ever been, and my kids are fine. They really are. They are fine, thank God, because they had a strong mother, which is me, who loved them, unlike my mother.
Right.
But that taught me to love my kids.
Can I ask you a question? You said that you guys were abandoned, and you said that your mom tried to sell you guys?
I remember going to this house and this really rich, well, I thought they were rich because they had food. And that's something I never had was food. Like I'd go to school and I'd be this dirty little girl with my aunt's long skirts on and everybody'd eat lunch and I'd hide under the seat because I was so embarrassed because I was so hungry. And nobody wanted to play with me because, one, I have dark skin. I'm part Spanish, and my dad was German, and they didn't want nothing to do with me. And because I was Catholic and they were Mormon, they didn't want nothing to do with me. And when we'd go out in the field to play games, they would choose everybody. I'd be the last one because they didn't want to choose me because I was a dirty little girl, and a pretty girl, but still, that is devastating. I mean, to have your mom and dad not want you, and I, like I said, I have no self-esteem. I have to get up in the morning and look my best. I never go without my lipstick, and I do look good for my age. I exercise and take care of myself. It affects me, and I want everybody to love me because I love everybody. I just do. I love everybody, and when they hurt me, it hurts me deeply. I want everybody to accept me and love me. I have a problem with that.
And I feel the same way.
I think we all do.
Yeah.
No, I feel the same way. I think people who've been abused like that, like what you're saying, I'm sorry. I have a big heart. I'm still a big softy. And then I still deal with mean adults, and I still deal with mean people who are rude. And I'm like, oh, my God, why are people so rude? And I wish I could just not care.
Yeah,
but
I hear you.
So I understand. I don't want my heart to get tough. I love your heart, Judy. I don't want you to change your heart because of these people that are so not nice. Thank you.
And
you have love in your heart.
I do. I do. I love everybody, and I get along with everybody, except my husband. He's over here snorkeling over here. Sorry, Daddy. But I know I don't do good with husbands.
Well,
yeah,
you've
got
to be able to vet somewhere.
Yeah.
And,
right.
You know, if your husband can't let you vent, then... Who can?
I've got to go through.
You know?
Well, I have five outstanding kids. I love my kids so much. And they understand and know me. But, yeah, it hurts.
So they know your story? Your kids know your story?
Yeah, after I started, I kind of gave my two youngest daughters, like I said, you know, I married the younger guy and had the two kids. Because he goes, oh, yeah, let's get married and have five kids. And we'll get married in the temple because he was Mormon. Oh, my gosh, he dumped me after I was – but we were married 9 months, and he started an affair when I was 4 months along with Tanya, my youngest. But, all it did was make me closer to my kids, so that's fine. He moved on, and I forgive him.
Did you, how long did you stay with him after you found out about the affair?
Oh, as soon as I found out, he was seeing her while he was seeing me. I worked at Safeway and I had five kids. And when I was pregnant, I had to work because to support him because he didn't work. So at night when I would work at Safeway, stocking shelves for extra money because I had all those kids to feed. My boys were taken away from me when they were like 11 and 12 because I had to work two jobs to support them. They took them away from me, and then I got married to the younger guy and had the two young kids. But what was my point?
I'm like that, too. I'm like that, too. My mind. I'm telling you. You're like me. Lord help us. I understand. So the point of the matter is, did you leave him right away, right when you had – when you found out about the affair, how long after that did you leave him?
Yes.
That's the question. Yep.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
It
was a place in Grantsville, and I had parked. He was driving my car. He didn't have a car or a job. So he took my car and parked it in the alley, and I knew everybody. And the cop came by, and he said, hey, Judy, your car has been parked in the alley for like 3 days. And I go, oh, no, my husband took it. And I went there and sit in that, and he had taken off with that married woman who was a Mormon with garments, and she had 3 kids. Come to find out she had 2 of his kids. We just found out 10 years ago. So,
my Lord.
I went home. I know. And threw all his stuff out of the house.
So out of the 3 kids, 2 were his?
Yes. Yes, like 14 years later, I met the young guy and had 2 of the kids. I was working at Safeway and met him. And then he was really hot. And as you read my book, you'll see that. But yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
But he had an affair with a woman.
That's how
right,
I feel.
Right. So he had an affair with a married woman, the Mormon lady.
Yes. Yes. And I went to the church. And I kneeled down in front of the pastor, and he goes, Judy, what you're saying to me is truth. And I said, yes, so help me God. He is. And I called the husband, told him, he says, no, she wouldn't do that. Yeah, and I told the church member, and they got me in my newborn. I was nursing my 4-week-old daughter, moved me to Grantsville. And I moved there, and I walked to work at Safeway because I didn't have a car and nursed her. At my noon, on my lunch breaks. Yeah. But I made it. Made
yes.
me strong and who I am today.
These people, I'm not going to say these people, because some people are going through what you're going through right now. But
I know.
This generation, they don't understand how much sacrifice and hard it was back then.
Yeah.
Like, seriously.
Mm. And you know what? I go to the gym 3 days a week, and everybody there knows me, and they've read my book, and they go, wow, Judy. And I get letters telling me, wow, Judy, thanks for opening up and telling your story. Nobody dares. And like Marcy said, my sisters, especially the one that was molested, has nothing. She won't talk to me because of it. But you know what? This is my story. This is me.
I know. Yeah. It comes with the fight, you with the family, and I have a lot of family members on my social media. I'm just starting to tell my story more, and everybody's on the edge of their seat because I haven't really put it out there too much of who, but everybody's waiting, and they're
what
not happy about it. I'm
what
Dr. Nancy. Yes, ma'am. I'm Dr. Nancy. That's Miss Kim.
I'd like to hear your story.
Well, I will.
Yeah, you know what?
No. I'll say a synopsis.
Yeah, all of us
right. I'll say it. Yeah, I'll say it in a synopsis.
Yeah, we've all been on this.
Yeah, we've all been on. But short or in long, my story is similar to yours. It was my father. And it was, I was 5 years old, and I went through sexual abuse. And so I can relate to a lot of what you were saying. And I went through this in my country, in Costa Rica. That's where I was born. And, my mom was a maid. We were homeless at one point. Yeah. We actually got kicked out in the street. And so, listening to your story, reading a little bit of, we can relate. And I definitely understand PTSD. I definitely understand self-medication. I definitely understand wanting to be numb. I've attempted suicide as a teenager. And
wow.
I lost my sister to suicide in 2020. So, sexual abuse, trauma, it all affects people very, very deeply. And we understand. And that's why I said, Miss Marcia, I thanked her so much for taking that position to assist and to support, because it's very difficult to gather your thoughts and to open up and to share. And like you said, your sister, even your own sister, you didn't want to break up your relationship with your sister. But this opening up your story comes with warfare, spiritual warfare. You're going to have people that are going to support you, and then people that you would expect to support you will not. And so you just have to be even stronger again for the new battle of telling
you. You know
story.
What? Because of me and my personality, I'm so happy all the time and outgoing. Everybody, thank you, God, loves me. I have nobody has ever criticized me, ever. They've listened to my story, and really, Only ones that haven't is my two, well, one sister, actually. Yeah. Because she loved my father. She shot, him molesting her was love. He made her think that he loved her. Yeah.
That's all she knew. She was a child. It's normal. I still love my father. I don't hate him. I'm not mad. I mean, I wish he didn't do that. I was upset when I was younger. But I'm in a place of healing, and I'm in a different place. I don't hold that and keep it inside of me.
What nationality are you?
Spanish. I'm black. See? I'm black Spanish.
See?
So I'm Afro-Latina. So I went through a lot of abuse, bullying, mm-hmm. being called ugly black girl, big nose, big lip black mm-hmm. girl, a lot of mean names from white Spanish, white people, and I've had to deal with black people. I can't fit in anywhere. It's like it's a battle. I'm like, wait a minute, I think I'll fit here.
You fit in here.
They're being mean. No, I hear you. It's been a fight. Yeah. It's been a fight everywhere.
Yes. And I am the darkest. There's five. I am the darkest of all. And I would go to my friend's house, and I'd sit there, and the mother was feeding her daughter, and she looked at me, and she goes, me and my sister, and she goes, I do not want you to play with these Mexican kids. They are worthless, mm-hmm. and I want you out of my house. I mean, prejudice when I was young.
I believe it.
Big time. Mm-hmm. Big time. And I am dark.
Yeah, very hurtful.
I was. Well, I've got white hair now, but. Yeah,
right.
I am dark.
And that does affect your self-esteem. It does affect your self-esteem. I use a lot of words of affirmation to empower me, and I empower a lot of kids today. I empower them, and I'm like, oh, well, if they don't like you, oh, mm-hmm. well, instead of that. But inside, I have a big heart.
It's
and I'm big
easy.
Softy. And it hurts.
It's not that
and
easy.
I understand.
No. Everyone
it's easier to do that. It's okay. I understand. We understand.
Many out of us aren't here.
So nice talking to you, ladies.
Yeah. I have a question. Do we have anybody else on the line?
Nope. There's no one else on the line. It's just the four of us.
Miss Marcia. What? Want to share her story? What made you want to?
It bothered me. You know, I even though I was a CPA, I actually did a lot of work in politics and helping. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't want to brag or anything, but I actually advised Governor Schwarzenegger and Governor Brown and on some issues that were pretty complicated. You know, I had kind of a financial brain to help them make decisions that were good, you know. And I always saw this problem with poor, abused. I just never thought we did enough for this population that nobody wanted to look at. And that's what got me wanting to go into this. I went into mainly the poor aspect, but it ended up getting the sexual abuse, which I'm actually doing some research because I'm trying to look at getting a grant for a documentary, and the publishing company we set up, we set it up in Hawaii because that's where my son lives. And I looked at some foundations in Hawaii and to maybe fund our documentary, and I found that Hawaii, that the child abuse has just skyrocketed since the pandemic. And really high. And if you think about it, that state got the hardest hit of any of the other states with unemployment when the tourism just totally stopped. So you've got a lot of stressed families, and the abuse and molestation has just increased a lot. So I'm kind of focusing on, believe it or not, Hawaii.
I believe
to
it.
To help
mm-hmm.
us, because it'll help them, you know, even though our story would take place in the Great Basin, mostly Utah, Nevada, and Arizona, and places, you know, Wyoming. But the story is
universal, and particularly Hawaii. So that's kind of where I'm going is looking at possibly. I've got a foundation in mind that I'm actually talking to, that's based in Honolulu, and believe it or not, you're not going to believe this, but the foundation was started by the family of a woman that was my roommate at college. I mean, I just stumbled on this. I don't know that that's going to get me anywhere because her mother is the one that started the foundation, not her. And I don't know if she's got any strings. I just thought, wow, what a tiny world this is that a subject like this would end up like this, you know? Because she was from an incredibly privileged life, and then I want to really explore with her getting this story out because it's so pervasive in society. And I honestly think the abuse and neglect and molestation and incest, a lot of these children are becoming very, very troubled as teenagers. And, we talk about crime and we go, well, we got to get the guns off the street and all this stuff. We really got to get into the children. That's where
every youth.
That's where you got to put your funding. And that's kind of where I'm going is getting more funding at the right spot rather than waiting till it's been becoming a total catastrophe.
Right.
You know, like Judy, just in her family, she had her brother was taken from the family and sent to Boys Town because of him getting into trouble in Nebraska. And her two boys had to go to a type of Boys Town in, Utah or I don't know where it was, Judy.
That's because I was a single mother and I was working two jobs.
Oh, yes.
Two kids, you know, right. And I couldn't take care of my sons, but they know that.
It's a lot of,
They have a father that is an alcoholic, a drunk, a drug addict. But my two daughters that I raised by myself because, you know, that the guy that got me pregnant, I left him. The church moved me. I worked, and I have never been promiscuous. I'm not a drunk or a druggie. So this has made me a strong, good God, you know, a good person. So it's not all about people that get molested and that turn into drunks and all that. I didn't because I am strong and I will not do that to my five kids. I won't and I didn't. So
thank God that you were able to do that, Ms. Judy.
That's so awesome.
I had to.
Seriously. I'm so proud of you and your outcome.
My kids looked up to me, you know. I couldn't be a drunk and slut. I couldn't.
Right. Ms. Marsha, I did want to say.
Although I might have wanted to.
Right.
That would be
fun. Even though you wanted to, right? Hey, look. We had different faces.
You're in a new place today. But for Ms. Marsha, I just want to say that. I just want to say that you are being a voice for the voiceless. Yes, you're being a voice for the voiceless.
Yes, and I can be.
And
I'm lucky that.
You're using your influence and you're walking on purpose. It's not that the world is small. The world is very big, but when you're walking on purpose, the right things will come to you and the right people will come back in a little circle to let you know you're in the right place at the right time doing the right thing for the people. And you're doing that.
Right. And you know, I'm kind of, when I get into a subject, I try to become an expert, you know, it's just in my brain. That's why I became a consultant to Brown and Schwarzenegger. You know, and I want to tell you a little snippet, when Governor Brown, Jerry Brown was running for office, I don't know what state you guys are in, but he was our governor before the one we have now. He was running against a woman named Meg Whitman, and she started eBay. I think she was a multi-billionaire eBay, you know, founder, and they were both running against each other, and both of them, believe it or not, within 15 minutes of each other often would call me for advice on how do I handle this issue. It happened to be something I was an expert on, and I would give them the answer, and I tell them, I go, you know, I'm talking to your competitor, I'm talking to Meg or I'm talking to Governor Brown, I just want you to know, full disclosure, and they both would say, we don't care that you're talking to my, you know, my, the other candidate. We just want to get it right, you know, because when the press comes to us, I want to have the right answer. And so I felt really good about helping them both out. And I feel the same way about my passion with this issue with child abuse. And this whole issue is so under the weeds, and it's driving me nuts with, I think, a lot of what
yes.
I'm seeing today, and I think it's going to get worse with all
yep.
of these kids being at home
yep.
in unhealthy environments and nobody to talk to and not going to school
mm-hmm.
every day, and the teachers aren't seeing it. I just see, honestly, I see a like a bomb going off. It's already starting to, and I really don't think it's by chance that we're seeing a lot of horrible mass killings. I think you've got a lot of troubled people out there, and we've really got to look at it. And taking guns away isn't going to do it. You've got to fix the mind. You've got to fix the mind, which is even more difficult.
Right.
Yeah. Well, yeah, go back to the beginning of where, like we talk about it in the classes that I teach is, you know, we need to get a hold of the parents, and we need the parents to understand these certain things about sexual abuse.
Right.
And we need them to be open. And actually, that's
right.
what I've found when I'm out there doing my classes. A lot of younger parents want to know. They want to know how to protect their kids. And so that's really a
great
mm-hmm.
Well,
we have somebody else. So I wanted to go ahead and bring her on and see if she had a question. Because I don't,
mm-hmm.
we're getting down to the last half an hour of our show. So I think it's Regla Girl, Miss Sarah from California. Is that you?
Yeah, it is me. Hi. Thank you. Yes.
Hi.
And I was calling, I initially was calling for a different reason, but it's interesting. I want to say, yes, I really agree with you. This last caller, I forget your first name, but it's, and I want to tell you, it's like if I were throwing the I Ching, I would say, I would speak it at, Chinese would say, good fortune, there's going to be good fortune with this you and the Honolulu thing. And it was real synchronistic because I spent quite a few years in Honolulu, and then some things that happened with me today that you don't know about had to do with Honolulu. So I get a big, like, intuitive, really good fortune with you and this Honolulu thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I really agree with you about education with the children. And what I want to say about that, even though I called about something else, I want to talk about this because it's been on my mind. What I like about it is that it takes it out of the realm of mental illness and there's something wrong with people, wrong with anybody. See, it brings it back into the realm of education. And I want to say one of the things that I found in my own personal research, because I did do some personal research in this area, and I worked with children when I lived in Honolulu. And unfortunately, when I one of the things that I did was I worked in an after-school program for the YWCA,
mm-hmm.
which is where
mm-hmm.
I discovered that there was this thing happening in the 70s, child abuse. And me and the director didn't know what to do about it, you know. And then I worked my way up to director, and then I changed jobs. And then I began to unravel my own personal history with my own abuse. And I was in a position where I had a large number of a population coming in, and I was doing intakes on them. And so one of the things that I began to see and was doing my own personal research is that I suspected that there may be a correlation between early trauma and abuse and addiction, even though some of the literature in 12-step programs,
mm-hmm.
some of it said that there wasn't. I suspected that perhaps there was because I had some, and so did my brother and sister. And I began to, and because some of my friends in 12-step programs had some as well as we talked to each other. So with this population that was coming in and I was doing intakes, I was seeing a correlation. But here's what I want to say because of what you're in a position to do something that I'm maybe not. I also saw a correlation in blocked creativity. There seems to be a correlation as well. Hear what I'm saying? In blocked creativity. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like that if children were just simply allowed to express their natural creativity, and what I was doing also was I was doing their astrological charts unbeknownst to them. So I was, like, learning and seeing, like, what areas where it was, you know, because some people, there's different ways to express creativity, right? So I would just kind of then ask them, while we had the time to talk, I'd say to them, hey, by the way, did you ever have any interest in, these were Marines, by the way, but I'd say to them, hey, by the way, did you ever have any interest in drawing, you know, or painting, or, hey, by the way, you know, were you a good dancer, you know, do you like to dance, you know, or, hey, by the way, you know, do you play the guitar, you know, just to see if, or do you like to write, or, you know, do you like to spend a lot of time, are you so, you know, you hear what I'm saying, you know, to see if that lined up with the creative aspect that I was seeing astrologically, because I really did see that there was a block in creativity as well as the abuse history with this, like, addiction thing that was now showing up in their military life. Mm-hmm. So I want you to know that, you know, as you move forward with this, because one of the mistakes that I made in my career life was that I assumed, you know, I went for the more arts. Well, maybe it's not a mistake. My life's not over. So that I studied, when it came to career choices, I studied the arts. I studied music and assumed that other people were going to handle this, because back in the 70s, when I saw this, I knew there was a need for this. And, you know, nothing happened. The mess got bigger. Nothing was done. And then I woke up, you know,
And you know that creativity, that is exactly the programs that are being cut in schools today. They're cutting music and dance and art and drama and all the wonderful things that can bring the children out of their shells are cutting them exactly when we should not be doing that.
I know. But I know. So I'm just why I'm glad for the opportunity to say what I said. And I'm going to continue to work on being more articulate, more creative about the way that I say that.
You said it great.
Yeah.
But,
said it perfectly.
And I had this other interesting experience today, which was there's a group that I meet with once a week, and I've started to study scripture, and we're doing, I think, for about a couple of months it's going to take, and we ordered this little book on Proverbs, but it turns out that the four of us who've been meeting, aside from this other larger group that we do, we're all survivors, and we're all in the recovery. Just one of us is more newer, but so it turns out that when we always go to a place where we have a meal, and then we take a different place, and they let us sit there for a long time, and then there's a workbook, and we've done the work, and then we answer the questions, and so just Proverbs is what we've been doing. So Proverbs. Mm-hmm. I'm not a person who studied a lot of the scripture and the Bible. So this week is about the fool. So I know we're running low on time. And what I want to say is what we ended up doing, because when we answer the questions, it's inevitable that we talk about our lives and our history. And this week what happened was the fool, for all of us, turned out to be our abusers, right? And because of these questions, and I'm going to just read a couple of them to you, just so that you get the idea, because probably not everybody listening is familiar with Proverbs. I never was. But it's like, you'll get, some of these are popular. As a dog returns to its vomit, so a fool repeats its folly. That's Proverbs 26:11. Okay. It is to a man's honor to avoid strife, but every fool is quick to follow. Quick to quarrel.
Yeah.
Then there's Proverbs 18:7, which is, a fool's mouth is his undoing, and his lips are a snare to his soul. Okay?
That's
one.
That's good.
Then there's one. Oh, Proverbs 13:19 is, a longing fulfilled is sweet to the soul, but fools detest turning from evil. That's Proverbs 13:19.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so you kind of, here's one. A fool finds no pleasure in understanding, but delights in airing his own opinions. That's the one
right.
I used today about my mother. I used it today about my mother when they asked the question. But, so here's going to be, I'm going to try and make this really concise. So get it. This was amazing for me, for all of us who met there today, because it was sort of transformational. So all of a sudden, because actually, and it's funny because the way the book, however, when you turn the page in this book, it then kind of, it leads you to this place where then you get to Jesus, and what Jesus kind of says is, do not judge or you too will be judged. He brings you to a place, and it's in Matthew, and remember, Matthew is the tax guy. And he brings you to this, but really he's bringing you to a place where you start to see there's a difference between judgment and discernment. So we need to I started to see that, we do need to develop like discernment or prudence, wisdom, to be able to discern who is a real fool, because judgment is different because listen to Matthew 6, because this comes to deal with, because early in the show you guys were talking about entanglements that we can get into, you know, that codependent thing that we can get pulled into entanglements with fools, right? We can't, that negative, energetic negative entanglements. That's what I think this is talking about. But Matthew 7, I couldn't believe it. It says, do not give dogs what is sacred or throw your pearls to pigs. They may trample them under their feet and turn and tear you to pieces.
I'm laughing that you said that scripture.
Turn and tear us to pieces.
Well, I'm not laughing, but I have that scripture. I have a social media page called Nancy D. Brown Ministries, and I pinned that scripture at the top. So that's just pinned at the top. And that's really what that goes to. That goes for me. What I got from that was, and I'm cracking up, you're finishing with that, but the reason that I pinned that and I got that is because, you know, we as women, and I'm talking about the women that have been abused and have been kind of weak-spirited because we've been through abuse and still very loving and people take advantage. So don't throw your pearls. Don't throw your body. Don't throw your soul. Don't throw your spirit. Don't throw your body, your sexual organs, whatever, to pigs, to just anybody who doesn't deserve it, because they will trample over it, okay? They will not appreciate your body. They will not appreciate your mind. They will not appreciate your soul, your love, and your spirit. So thank you for sharing the scriptures today, because you were on point, and they all had something to do with what we're talking about today. And it was very, very, very much on point. And we do appreciate you sharing that. Seriously, that was good. I have that scripture, that last one you just closed off with, is the scripture that I have pinned at the top of my page. Everybody had to read that before they could scroll down to the next anything on my page. But it's so true. I mean, what better way than to say we have to protect ourselves? And we've been through a lot in this life. We've been through a lot of abuse. We deal with post-traumatic stress. You know, the wrong people will trigger us or will make us go backwards in our healing.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to protect our healing. We have to protect our minds, our body, our soul. I'm taking a Christian leadership class, and that's what they talk about. They talk about the importance of girding your soul.
against attacks, especially when you start answering calls in ministry or speaking about a story to just as much. That's a ministry. Everybody has a ministry. And when you start sharing your story, you're standing up. You're rising up, and you're standing up, and you're now standing on your truth. And a lot of times, we get a lot of backlash for that.
So, yes, you know, and what I saw, and what I saw in this, what seems to speak so clearly is that to attempt to engage, you know, is. No, the better way to say it is the real deal is to self-control and talk less. Because to talk at all, to engage at all.
Mm-hmm. With the abuse and the disrespect. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, and just like Ms. Kim was saying earlier,
I agree with her.
Right. Sometimes you just have to set the boundary. Because I've had people attacking my social media. I have people who love me, and I have people who hate me. And unfortunately, we, you know. But sometimes you just have to set the boundary and choose yourself and focus on your healing. I wanted to thank you so much. What's your name again, ma'am?
Regular girl. Sarah, regular girl.
Okay, I know it was something, Sarah, girl, but I couldn't remember the first one. Miss Sarah, regular girl. And I remember you because I've heard you a couple of times. Thank you so much for sharing. I just want to say that we're almost done with the time, but thank you so much.
All righty.
Next time, please come a little earlier because I love you. I do love.
You guys need to connect on Facebook.
Come a little early.
Hey.
We want to get back to Ms. Judy and Ms. Marsha. Yes, ma'am.
That's what I was just going to say. Let's get back to them and let's see if there's anything that you guys want to tell us, if there's anything in the future coming up that you want to talk about or, you know, just kind of leave us with, you know, your thoughts on on NAFTA or whatever you want to do. So.
Yeah, what I'm looking personally is to start to engage more with victims and people that and families, parents of victims. I think this is long overdue to get this more elevated, this topic into our mainstream. I've done this type of work before with other issues, so I kind of have my own little model on how I've been able to do it. The difficulty now, though, that we have with subjects like this, if it's an issue that you think needs to be more exposed for helping people, is we've got so much problem with we used to have traditional newspapers that would write the story, and then people like me would get to know the reporters. They'd write the story, and then that would be picked up by the radio, and then the story would also be picked up by TV, and that's how you got things out there. Today, nobody reads the newspaper. Nobody. I mean, it's not like nobody does it, but we don't have that newspaper anymore, and it's very difficult to take an issue and get it. Knowledge about it. That's why we're at trying to do a documentary that will people will watch something on TV, you know, but they won't necessarily read it in the news. So so that's really where we're focusing on is letting people know about this issue and helping them just being aware, just knowing that other people have the same problem. Right there is therapy. Rather than my neighbor where her daughters don't have anybody to turn to and they're just dealing with it on their own and nobody knows what to do, just reading my book will help them. You know, I mean, that's what's rewarding is just helping people heal and having someone like Judy as a model. Well, she was able to survive, and she doesn't have an IQ of 830 or whatever the IQ is. And,
actually, I do.
And she didn't go to college.
Actually, I do. Marcy, actually, I do.
Well, I know. I don't have a high IQ.
I only went to the sixth grade,
but I had a test and my IQ is really high. I'm not educated as educated, but I am so street smart. Street smart.
Yeah.
I am.
Yeah.
Right. And
I've lived
here. Yeah.
I'm 80 years old and I'm still going through it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Ms. Judy,
I
was going
to
say,
people can relate
sorry,
to you more than
mm-hmm.
No, go ahead.
Yeah.
Ms. Marsha, go ahead.
I think
I'm
I was doing, when I said 830, I think that's an SAT score. I don't think that's an IQ.
It's okay. I know what you meant. Ms. Judy, I was going to say, I dropped out in the eighth grade. A lot of times people who've been through trauma, like I went back to school, I got my GED, I went back to school, I got my associates, I went back,
there
I'm still in school. That's part of my healing. I'm still in school. I'm always
there
in school. That helps me with my healing.
Yeah.
But because of my trauma, I have a harder time remembering things. I have a harder time. I have to work harder.
Yeah.
I do have to work harder.
Me
I
too.
Do. I work. I fight, and I work hard, and I don't quit, and I don't give up. So,
and
but,
I have
but,
to focus because, yes, I hear you. And it's so hard. I struggle all the time.
It is.
You know?
It is.
I do.
Yeah.
But
brain
I want
on
to
trauma,
be the best that
recovering.
I can be. I
right.
do.
You're intentional about your recovery.
And then
I'm you're intentional.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
I have no self-esteem, though. I have to keep telling myself I'm a good person every day. I do.
Yeah, affirmations. You have to. You have to say it to yourself till you believe it.
Do.
Amen.
Thank you.
Ms. Marsha, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Ms. Marsha, what were you saying, though? Because I'm sorry. What were you saying the last?
Oh, no, I think.
No, it's okay. It's okay.
No, I was just thinking that when you, what I like about the book is I think a lot, the mainstream will connect with it. Right now, most of the people connecting it are people that have had no experience in this. Where I want to go with it is to have more people like your audience, the victims, know that they can relate to Judy's story, and it gives them beingness. It validates them, and that's really so important. You're not alone in this, you know, that there's others out there. And you can talk about it. And that's what I love about your show, that you allow people to listen and relate and reflect.
You
and that's so important.
It, yeah. It is. It really
well,
is.
Well, let me ask you that,
not alone.
Marsha, and Judy, both, both of you. Are you, first of all, are you both on Facebook? Or can people find you on Facebook?
Yes.
Or can they find you on LinkedIn? Or where can we find you?
Yeah, I'm on Facebook. We had a Wretch Book Facebook, but it's been taken down. I'm trying, and we did have a website that I wish is not quite. We're having issues with our social media on our book, but I personally have a website, Marsha Fritz, that you can reach me there. And also, our book is on Amazon, but I'm trying to get our website back up. It's been taken down, and that's been challenging for us. So, but at some point, we'll have a website.
But no, I am on Facebook.
Okay. Well, now, what was your personal website, Marsha?
Judy, what?
It's just Marsha, MarciaFritz.
Yeah. And I'm Judy Martin, Judy Herzog Martin. Yeah, I'm
What's
way out there.
What's the middle
there.
Name?
There.
What's
Judy Herzog Martin.
Yeah, what's your name? Herzog.
What's that?
H-E-R-Z-O-G.
H-E-R-Z-O-G.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Judy Herzog Martin. I'm Judy Martin.
Okay.
That's my married name. Then.
Okay.
I've had a lot of married names, but this is my last one, hopefully.
Okay.
This is your last. And then your book is on
right
Amazon. And then, then, Marsha, are they Facebook at all?
Are they what?
Are you on Facebook?
Am I on Facebook? What, I don't know, somehow you... I couldn't hear that question.
I keep cutting out.
I am personally
on Facebook.
Yes. Yes, I'm on Facebook.
Okay. So we
and we did have a
now.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Great.
And another website we're talking about. So you're trying to, and you know, because we do a lot of things on Facebook as well, and so you can find a lot of other people's stories and things on the NASCA, NAASCA, on their Facebook page, and then you can also go on to like any of the any of us that are there, you know, and we post things all the time too. I'm not as good about it. I think Dr. Nancy is a little bit better about posting things. But yeah, I'd love to find you on there and just kind of connect to and
so
you stay in touch.
So your Facebook
is Judy, Miss Judy.
Your Facebook is my Facebook.
It's N
Judy M A R T I N Judy Martin. Maiden name is Herzog, so that should be on there. Yeah, I'm right there. I'm there every day.
Okay.
I love Facebook.
Awesome. Yeah,
oh,
we love to connect with you. And so you guys, yeah, and you know what I'll do is I will find you guys on there, and then I'll connect with you, and then I'll connect you to the NASCA Facebook page as well, and then you guys can start seeing, you know, who else is on there and what else we have to offer and everything.
Yep.
So just know, Miss Judy and Marcia, that you're both a part of the family, and we just welcome you.
Thank you for sharing. Yeah, and if
we
get our book, our Wretch Like Me book Facebook up, I will connect with you as well. So,
And then we'd love to have you post it. You could go ahead and post it on the American page. We'd love
Thank you.
Hey,
I love it. Thank you guys for sharing today.
Yes,
I don't
Ms.
feel
Judy,
alone anymore.
Your story is amazing.
Thank you,
and
thank you so much
for just being open to hear. Being open and sharing everything with us.
You're so
welcome. Thank you.
Thank
you for sharing your strength, and thank you for being a. Thank you for sharing your strength, Ms. Judy.
Thank you for sharing your testimony.
And Ms. Marcia, thank you so much for being a voice for the voiceless and using your influence and helping people. I mean, both of you guys are a wonderful team, and you're doing a great job.
And you
thank
as well.
Thank you for having us on.
Oh,
absolutely.
Thank you. We enjoyed it.
Oh, we're so glad.
Yeah, thank you.
So glad to have you. And it was just a treat to have this Judy come on.
Yes.
Yeah, I know. I didn't expect that. I wanted her to come on, but now I guess I talked her into it because she was supposed to come on.
Absolutely. It worked out. So
great.
So awesome.
Well,
thank you, Regular Girl.
Thank you for being.
Thank you, Regular Girl.
Thank you for being on.
Thank you for sharing some scriptures too, closing it off.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah,
I like that.
Yeah, it works.
So remember, everyone, you can go on.
Yep.
Yeah, we are. So you can go on .org if you want to find out more about, you know, Miss Judy's story and or connect with her on Facebook, and as well as Marcia, who wrote the book. So thank you both for being on tonight. You know, as we always like to say on the show is, you know, there's so many people out there and there's so much abuse going on. We can make a difference. So if you see something, please say something. Good night, everybody, again, for being on.
Good night.
Thank you so much.
Good night.
Thank you.
God bless you.
Another tomorrow, 'cause that's gone.